The Cultural Council's mission is to nurture, promote, and support a healthy, diverse, and inclusive cultural sector so that the arts and culture are a part of everyday life for everyone. We invite listeners to discover Florida's cultural capital online at palmbeachesculture.com. Hi again, and welcome back to the Arty Gras podcast. I'm your host, Sarah LaPierre, and we are about to dive into, again, all things art and culture of Palm Beach County. Thank you to our sponsor, the Cultural Council. We are excited to bring you another episode with an amazing guest, Matt. Remind me your last name again.
Stabile.
Okay. And I asked this off camera, but of course it went right out of my brain. Matt Stabile is here. He's an actor, director, writer, and an educator. And I have a million questions to get into. Great. So thank you for being on the
Absolutely.
Show.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Okay. So first of all, an introduction and a little bit of background. You are the artistic director of Theater Lab at FAU in Boca. So can you tell us what that role entails?
Sure. So Theater Lab is the professional company on the campus. I think it might be the only one in Florida that is directly on the campus of the college. And so we are exclusively committed to new work. So all we do are U.S. Regional, world, and U.S. premieres. And so it's all new plays. And my job as producing artistic director is to both manage the artistic side of the company. So in terms of like what shows are we producing, you know, season selection, what we're developing, what kind of choices we make artistic. To kind of like be on top of all that, I guess. Yeah. And then also as producing that I'm managing the company in terms of, you know, finances and budget and raising money and doing all that stuff. I have a wonderful team, a managing director, Cassie Chris, who helps with all that stuff too. But yeah, I guess that's the job.
That's putting fantastic. On plays. That seems like a lot of hats immediately.
It is.
Yeah. How long have you been in that role?
So I actually was there when we founded the company. Lou Tyrrell, who was the artistic director of Florida Stage for 30 years. And then he and I worked together at Arts Garage after Florida Stage closed. And then we established the company on the campus of FAU Theater Lab in 2015. And then in 2018, he stepped down as artistic director and I took over that role. And now he is in the role of founding director and supporting all we do, which is amazing because he has 30, 40, close to 50 years of experience with new plays. And so it's really wonderful to be, you know, as much as I'm wearing a ton of hats, I also have like mentorship and experience around me to kind of help guide me through the areas that I'm like, ooh, I'm at sea a little bit
for
here.
For sure. Yeah. The community pulls you through.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So how about a little bit deeper into your background? You've been in theater for a really long time.
Yes.
Was there a specific, you know, a moment for you early on that you knew that this was the area that you want to kind of dedicate your career to?
Wow.
Big question.
I don't know if I can point to a specific moment. What I tell most people is that if you stay in this business long enough, what ends up happening is you try to quit 4 or 5 times. And every time you try to quit, because you're like, I just can't deal with this anymore. Every time you try to quit, another knock of opportunity happens. Mm-hmm. I also try when I work with young theater artists or people who want to get into the career that I just say, you know, like, don't try and plan your career out because you can't, you know? And so, but early on, I was really fortunate. I grew up in Miami and shout out Miami-Dade Public Schools and the magnet programs. I was in a magnet school of the arts in middle school and then got into the high school, Magnet School of the Arts, New World School of the Arts. And then, ended up getting into the college I wanted to go to. So it was one of these like, well, I guess I should do this.
Yeah.
And then came back to Florida after college. And again, like every time I thought, well, maybe I'm just not going to do this. Like some knock on the door would happen mm-hmm. and they'd be like, do you want to try doing this for a little while? And I was like, okay, let's try it. So
I love that answer. That's true artist problems right there.
Yeah, man.
That you're like, I know I got to quit this at some point, but it just keeps pulling you back
in. This is a bad relationship. No, but, I mean, you know, we get to those low points. And then something happens, I think, where it's very rarely the like, you know, oh, this is a great contract and great money. It's usually the thing that like speaks to your soul and you're
of
like,
course.
Oh, wow, this does change lives and does have an impact. And,
yeah, it's a moment of I can't not
right,
do this.
Right. Like, why would I do anything else? I'd be bored.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You daydream about that. Weirdly, I feel like artists do this. Maybe it's just me. You daydream about having some sort of regular job for a little while and being like, stable paycheck or like a regular schedule where we're not working 7 days a week or whatever the case is.
I always make the joke. I'm like, I would love a job that I could clock out at 4 o'clock and not think about that job again until I came back the next day. But I'm like, but would you love that job?
Right.
Like,
exactly.
You probably would hate that job.
Yeah. Your wheels would just have to be turning into something creative. Speaking of which, theater life can be like a bit of a roller coaster career path, as we just said.
Yeah.
How would you describe your experience with Theater Lab so far?
That's a good one. It's been really amazing to, it was like, let's try this. In terms of we only do new work. So like, you know, that's already that makes it difficult already because most people who come see our shows, they don't know anything about the show because they haven't heard of it before. The playwrights are all living playwrights. So like most of them, playwrights are not famous, unfortunately. And so like, they don't know anything about it. So to take that risk and be like, let's try this and see if people like it. And then people did start, coming around and supporting and becoming part of the community. So there was just like this really exciting, like, oh, this is wonderful. And, we kept having these experiences of, we'd be, doing a reading or something. And then all of a sudden we'd get a letter in the mail of like somebody offering us support and being like, I just love what you're doing and I want to be with you. So that was incredible. And then in terms of the roller coaster, then obviously we went through the pandemic it was, not too long, 5 years ago, like almost to the day where like everything completely closed down. And to be without the space of theater, which is like always what is essential. And we really learned that over that time. And then like, is this going to last? Is this going to survive? And then to see the comeback and like, we're finally now at a place where we're getting our pre-pandemic numbers back. And so like that has been like, that's another one of those things that like every time I've thought like, this is too hard. And then somebody comes along to say, hey, this matters to me as much as it matters to you. And that's been amazing. So I think, it's like, it's the whole thing about look for the helpers. It's like whenever you get frustrated or you get scared, and I guess this is my advice to anybody starting out in the career, it's like, look to those people outside of yourself that it is making a difference to, and just try for a day to do it for them. And if you can do that, I think then that starts the ball rolling and you can get back to the place of like, and I'm doing it for me too, if that's what you've lost. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's an incredible relationship to form with the community over time, to have this, trust in each other that they're going to support you. You're going to support them and do something that, super cheesy, feeds their soul.
Great.
Right. And they're going to be willing to risk, I'll say,
it is a risk,
spending their time on something that they just know nothing about. Right. I mean, that's a really beautiful relationship.
I tell people all the time, I'm like, the business of new plays directly implies that I cannot guarantee you're going to like every play you come see here. What I can guarantee is that when you come to the theater, you're going to get the best artistic effort. You're going to see, beautiful productions, and you're going to be cared for in a hospitality sense, that this is a space for you. And that way you can come to 4 shows a year and be like, yeah, that middle one wasn't for me, but like, I still felt good going to that place.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you can still, as an audience member, appreciate the quality of the production and the effort that goes in behind it. Right. And, you know, whether you're well-educated in theater or not, you'll have that experience, like you said.
That's right. Yeah.
So what is drawing you specifically to new work? And when you're, you know, when you're in the role where you're sitting down and determining, you know, what's going to come up in a reading or what's going to come up in a full production, how are you
making those
choices? Yeah, making those choices.
I don't even know. In terms of what draws me to new work, I think it's, I love the classics. Like I'm very, you know, like obviously I went through training and everything and that's what you do. You like learn the classics. And I think you learn the classics to be inspired by them. And then a very good friend of mine is the playwright of the show we're rehearsing right now. And we talk a lot about like, you learn structure so you can break it, right? But like too many artists early on, it's like, well, I want to break the mold. It's like, well, you have to know what the mold is if you want to break the mold, right? And so like how to work in it and then how to subvert it. So in terms of like new work for me, it's just, I don't know. I just think when I go see something, I don't rewatch like movies I love. That's not something I do. So I think I've always been drawn to like, what is that moment that I'm trying to figure something out, that I'm curious about something. And as an artist, I think working on new work, I'll never, even if a show like has had a world premiere and we're doing a regional or something, I'm not somebody who goes and like sees it. You know, I don't, part of me doesn't want to be influenced by like what somebody else did, you know, that I want that generative creation is what I think pulls me back to. And I think that just, that's how I get, you know, into the new work world. And I think that's also, I think that is some of how I choose scripts and program is that we are always very intent at Theater Lab with our design team and our artistic team of like being like, what hasn't our audience seen yet? Right. Like, and like, what would be new for them? Like, what have we not done in the space? You know, we didn't use water yet. All right, well, let's do a production where there's a bathtub and a shower on stage. Like, great, we do that. You know, so like, what have they not seen yet? And then also in terms of plays, like I'm always looking for moments in plays that I'm like, I've never seen that on stage before. Oh, that's exciting. That I have no idea how we'll do that. A lot of times, and I think my production staff goes crazy over this, is that like there's, I encourage playwrights, I'm like, write the impossible stage direction. Like write the thing that there's absolutely no way you can do in the theater. Because what that does is then we, as theater artists, we take that and we go, okay, well, what is this moment really about? And then we can't, you know, we're in a, what used to be a frozen yogurt shop. I make that joke all the time. We are a converted space. We don't have a fly system, right? So like we did a play not, you know, a few years back where the stage direction was that they fly around the room. And we're like, well, we can't do that. Right. So, so what can we do? And instead, you know, we hid twinkle lights on in the entire set that nobody knew were there. And in that moment, the whole stage went dark and just, it looked like the room was all stars. And then this family, instead of flying, they did a dance together and it, you know, it was completely the moment without being that moment.
Right.
And so I, you know, that's what draws. So if I find something in a play that I'm like, I don't know how we're going to do that, 90% of the time that play is going to get done by us.
Wow,
because
I like
it's
that.
Like, ooh, how are we going to pull this off? You know, and you have to, you know, take chances and see what
right.
works.
And you're, I mean, you're, that's incredible. You're constantly stretching your skills, right. your production team skills that way.
Yeah. And, I mean, why do it otherwise? Right.
Like
if you're just doing the same thing over and over again, yeah, who cares?
You're finding new ways to communicate to the audience too. Yeah. And sparks who knows what, you know, and whether it's somebody who's just an audience member or a student or another, you know, somebody in the theater, that's giving them an opportunity to.
Yeah. To engage,
expand.
To be, yeah. To like have their, I say all the time that the arts are the only, you know, being an educator, I'd say the arts are the only curriculum that are designed to teach empathy. And so like, if, just in a moment, I can open up your, you know, a production can open up your world a little bit to get you to think about something that you haven't thought about or think it from a new perspective. You don't have to change your mind, but like, at least you've thought about something from a different angle. And that for me is the magic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you've done tons of, you know, readings, hundreds of readings, yes. world premieres, first time premieres. Has there been, this might be a difficult question too, but has there been one, you know, production that's really stood out or reading that stood out to you?
Yes, all of them.
Right. Otherwise, you wouldn't have chosen them.
There is a little bit of like, I fall in love with the show we're doing at the time, you know, which I think is a requirement. Right.
Well, let me rephrase that then. Instead of stood out to you, because obviously all of them have stood out to you in some way. Is there one that, you know, has captured a memory for you that you come back to and think of frequently?
Yeah. So during the pandemic, we couldn't get together in person, obviously, and people started doing Zoom readings, which we started doing too. Everybody was doing them. And I was getting invited to watch, you know, Zoom readings by other companies and friends or whatever. And I just got to be like, oh God, I don't want to watch this anymore, you know? So we decided that, you know, I had a long history with audio plays, shout out podcast, like classic audio plays. Like, so I don't know, you know, if your listeners aren't aware, but like when these classic movies like Casablanca and all these movies came out, one of the ways they would promote the movie is they would do a radio version, and the radio version was free. There was a company down here for a while that like was producing these classic radio versions of these. And so like, I got to work with them a lot, and I really love audio plays. Like, it's just a fun way to experience. So we decided we would commission audio plays from playwrights, and then we recorded them and we would play them so that you weren't forced to like watch somebody in a Zoom box. Like, you were just having that experience.
Yeah.
Well, one of them called Ich bin ein Berliner by a Miami playwright, Vanessa Garcia, was all about her experience with the Berlin Wall falling. And she is my age. And in 88, I think she was in a, you know, third or fourth grade classroom or something. I can't remember. She, if you're listening, Vanessa, I'm sorry, I can't remember. and the Berlin Wall fell, and she had this visceral reaction to it and just started crying, and then was obsessed with it for years and years and years. And so the play was about her trying to figure that out. She is a first generation Cuban American. And like, she finally made the connection that like, oh, this is people going back to their country, and which is something that I would love to be able to do. So it's this beautiful play she puts together. It's autobiographical. We fully produced it, and we created a like an animated video companion to go along with it. And this is in April of 2021. So things were still dicey. The spaces weren't open, but we had an outdoor amphitheater at the college that we were allowed to use. So over the course of I think it was a weekend, we had people come to the outdoor amphitheater. We had two live musicians on the stage. We had a giant screen, and we played the audio play with the animated companion. And now it had been over a year since we had been in a theater space together. And we'd been producing work via Zoom and all this stuff, but it was the first time that I was in space with people. Distanced, obviously, and masked at this time and outside. And there was a moment in the play, probably first 10 minutes, where suddenly I heard a bunch of people laugh together at the same time. And I realized that's what I had been missing for the last year, that we had been doing the work, we had been doing this stuff, but what we didn't have was the communal experience and how it's essential that is. And like, you know, I think that people talk all the time about like, well, theater's dying. And it's like, I don't think that'll ever happen. And because it does give us something different than Netflix give us, right? And then the movies give us. It's like, I can go watch a movie by myself and experience it and have a great time, right? But to be in the theater and these scientific studies that show you that like heart rate sync up, breathing syncs up, when you hear that gasp from a bunch of people or that laugh. And so that memory will always stand out because it was a really difficult year and a really like, why are we doing this? And suddenly the answer was right there. It was like, we do this because people do need to come together. They need to experience stuff together. And that's why we do it. So that's the one that I think drove me through the next 2 years of like, how are we making it through this pandemic thing?
Yeah. Right. Definitely. I mean, my God, it gives you a really strong, you know, guiding star right there. Something to hold on to.
Exactly.
That you can say, we have to keep pushing through somehow.
People need this. Yeah.
In order to be able to create that for ourselves and for anybody else who's willing to participate.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really special. I love that.
Thank you,
man. All right. So as a writer, director, actor, do you find yourself gravitating towards one role more than the other?
Yes. And it shifted throughout my career, but I make a joke all the time now that I'm retired from acting. And primarily it's because like, I don't really have the time anymore with everything else I'm doing. So my primary focus now has been directing and play development. And so I don't have a ton of space for writing right now either. But those are all things that I did in the past. Mm-hmm. But even I think before it was like, this sounds arrogant, I guess, but like acting, I guess, always came a little easy to me. And because of that, I started moving away from it as early as college. Like I was just like, this, I get this too quickly. And like, it doesn't challenge me in a way that I want to be challenged. And suddenly like writing and directing were things that I was like, whoa, I don't know how to do that. And then design was something that I also started to study in college too, because I was just curious about like, well, how do you do that? Like, how do you take this thing? And because they were challenging, I ended up gravitating toward that more. But now it's primarily directing. And, you know, I view my role as a director to, people talk about like a director needs an army, and like what I think my role as a director is to get all the most amazingly talented people together and then just create a space that allows them to do what they do brilliantly. And so I very often say that like, if I've done my job right, what I'm really doing is getting out of the way.
Sure.
And that's kind of my primary focus now as a director.
Nice. So I want to talk more about some of the initiatives and programs that you guys go through. Yeah. So the Future Pages project was one that I was reading about, and I want to know, like, how did that come to life?
Yeah. So Future Pages project, is run, I got to give a shout out to our director of education, our amazing Jill Carr. She now runs that program. It stands for, Pages is an acronym. It stands for Playwrights, Artists, and Generation of Exciting Storytellers. And so it was based on a program that I created when Lou and I were at Arts Garage, which was called Yes Lab, Youth Engaged in Storytelling. I like the acronym stuff. Nice. I ran the program the first year at Theater Lab. And then I think Jill joined us after that and took over the program. What it does is, there are plenty of programs out there that teach kids theater or engage kids in theater. We're not interested in creating new actors and little playwrights and everything. What our program focuses on is we want to teach kids that their voice matters, that their stories matter, and the most effective way to communicate their stories. And so Jill goes into the public schools, our partners, and some, you know, additional community partners, and teaches a workshop on the parts of a story. Which is a very basic, you know, too many kids learn beginning, middle, and end. And we're like, that's not how you do it. You know? And I always give them the example. I'm like, if you go to the movie and you're 20 minutes later, you're still there in the beginning. And they're like, I guess, like, you know, so it focuses on like the parts of a story, because we also say like, you know, if somebody handed you a basketball on a basketball court and you had no idea what that was, you might figure out to throw the ball at the hoop, but you probably wouldn't know that you have to dribble. You probably wouldn't know those kind of rules. So we're like, learn the rules of this. Then we bring them to the theater to see a production. And then after they see that production, we take a theme from that production and we ask them, what's a time in your life that this theme has applied to you? So there's been all kinds of ones. Getting Stuck, Braver Than You Believe was our most recent one. And so these kids write their own personal stories about their personal experience. And then they submit them back to us. The top 2% get selected to come join us for 6 weeks, where they continue to rewrite and refine their stories along with the other kids who have been accepted. The program is like grades 4 through 12. So there are seniors in high school getting notes from fourth graders and vice versa, which is really fun. And then they rewrite their stories and then they sort of combine them together. So like, if you have a story that's about, you know, the time your hand, there was actually one of these, your time you got your hand stuck in a cookie jar and had to go to your mom to confess what you had done and get it out, right? Then like maybe one of the other kids plays your mom for the two lines, and they do this whole thing and then they rehearse it and then they perform it on our stage. And they get a chance just to stand up and perform their story and share their story. And so again, like, we're not focused on like being the best performers or being, you know, amazing theater makers. Like, mm-hmm. we're just like, just, you can tell your story and people will listen to you. And, you know, here's an effective way to do it. And that's that program.
Wow.
Yeah. So we do that every fall. And then the spring we have a different program called Lab Rats, okay. which is for just high school students. And they come see shows, and then they get connected with a playwright, and they work with the playwright for about a month and a half to write their own short plays. And then we do a reading of their short plays.
That's awesome. Fantastic. Yeah. And then you have another initiative, and this has been going on for a while, I believe, Theater Lab's Fair Play Initiative.
Yes.
It's a program for LGBTQ plus playwrights, and it's in its fifth year.
It's in its fifth installments, and okay. It's all through thank you, Our Fund Foundation. The Our Fund Foundation is a LGBTQ philanthropy organization based in Fort Lauderdale, and they have been funding this program for 5 years now. And so it is specifically a commission and development program for LGBTQ plays and stories. And so we put out a call for submissions. I think this last year we got like 120 something from around the country and two from overseas, first time ever. And they send us in like, here's my idea for a play. And here's a sample of my writing. And then we select which play we want, because too often playwrights, they have to sit in their room in their cave and write their play by themselves. Yeah. And they don't get paid until hopefully someone wants to produce it. So we were like, well, what if we give them a little money to just take some time off their other job and just write this play? And that's the commission part. And then the development is we spend about a year developing it before it gets its first reading. And it's been really amazing. We've gotten some fantastic plays out of it. We've made some really incredible connections to new playwrights. We've broadened our community, and they've told some really impactful, fun stories. So we have our new one. This year is our fifth installment, and the first reading of that play ever will be on April 19th at our new play festival.
Okay, fantastic. Which leads us in to the next questions, right? You've got a brand new festival that's happening. Yes. This is a big deal it's 3 weeks long, right?
Yes, 3 weeks.
And you're doing readings and full production.
Correct.
Tell us about what we can expect from this.
Yeah. So this is our 10th anniversary season. We've done a new play festival every year. 1 year we did two. And those were traditionally a week long event where we would do like up to 6 readings of new plays over a weekend. And so you could come for the weekend and see all these readings. This year we've changed that model to go to full productions. And so there have been some very famous examples around the country of festivals like this. Humana Festival was in Louisville, Kentucky for 40 years. It's sort of a destination style event. We run for, so we will open a world premiere on our stage on April 5th. On the following Friday, April 11th, the college will open a brand new workshop production of a brand new play that's literally still being written on their stage. And then the next day we'll open a third event called the Happiness Gym, which is a non-traditional theater experience. So the idea is that people who like new plays, who love theater, can come to town for a weekend. We have an exclusive hotel partner, the Wyndham in Boca Raton. Shout out Wyndham. and they're giving discount rates and luxurious accommodations. So you can come to town for a weekend. You get in on a Friday night. You can come see all three main stage performances over the Saturday and Sunday. And then you can also, we'll be sprinkling in some readings that will be free during that time. So you can be fully immersed in the world of new plays for a weekend. And, you know, Boca Raton in April is not such a bad sell.
Not bad at all, right?
Yeah.
So how do you think this year's featured plays are going to explore a different maybe subject matter for the audience?
Yeah, when you do a festival, you want the three main events to kind of be in conversation with each other, to touch on each other's themes a little bit. The play Theater Lab is producing is called The Impossible Task of So the overall theme of, like, I think this year's festival is science and technology and how it can assist in the essential human connection, which is what we all need. And so we have a play called The Impossible Task of Today, which is about a guy who's going through, he's an agoraphobe. He doesn't leave his apartment. So he's going through obviously a mental health crisis. And he's trying to work his way out of that. And there's a whole element of social media and like how that has contributed, could help, whatever. The college is doing the Frankenstein Project, which is all about a young girl who has lost her mother. And she is assigned a report on Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein after losing her child. And her father, the girl's father, is a scientist who has invented an AI robot. So again, there's this like technology element, this character moving through grief, trying to figure out, can technology help me or is it more damaging? What do I want to do here? The third event, we were like, okay, so we got technology and grief. So we're like, how about science and happiness? And so the third event is a non-traditional theater event called the Happiness Gym, where 16 participants come into a theatrically designed space and you're going to be led through these really fun, engaging exercises that have been scientifically proven to raise your well-being and your happiness.
Wow.
And over the course of about 90 minutes, you do several exercises and create really lasting connections with the people in the room. And so we were like, yeah, that sounds like a festival, you know, let's use science to our benefit to make us happy.
What a cool experience that sounds like.
Yeah, in theory, we'll see. We haven't done it yet.
Well, no, definitely unique. Yes, we can say
it's
that
gonna
for
be
sure.
Very cool. And I think, you know, also to have something that's like non-traditional theater as part of it, you know, like, okay, these two, you come sit down, you watch the play like this, this one, you go in and you're going to move through the space and you're going to like talk to other people and have fun. There's not going to be any like pull you out of the audience improv stuff. So you don't have to be scared of that, it's definitely going to be a really, I think the people who do that experience are going to talk about it for the next year and a half of their life.
Is that an experience that you've had on the table before as an offering?
It's actually going to be the very first time it's ever been done. It's a concept by a playwright that we know well. He came to me with this concept and I was like, yeah, let's try it. Since that has happened, and we're going to be working with a company out of New York called New Neighborhood Theater, that is going to help implement it.
Okay.
And since that has happened, two other theaters around the country have signed on with the National New Play Network, and it's now going to be what's called a rolling world premiere. So our event in Boca will be the very first one. The end of the summer, there's going to be a second one at Kitchen Dog Theater in Dallas, Texas. Completely, you know, new design, completely new team working on it. And then there'll be another one in the next year at a theater in Austin called Vortex.
How cool.
Yeah. So, you know,
exciting.
I think it's a really interesting, cool concept. And the idea behind the gym, you know, why it's called the Happiness Gym is that you can change, you know, the idea is that at some point you could make it a permanent installation that like, cause the exercises can change, people need to come back. You don't just do an exercise once and expect everything to be better.
Right.
And so, yeah, so, you know, in theory, there's a way for us to bring it back and like have new exercises and
stuff. Still have a completely unique experience in the next installment.
It's all the things we believe in theater, which is like, we want to change lives, we want to make a positive impact, and like I think it's going to be very evident with this, like this is what you can do.
That's really interesting. I'm excited about
me
that
too. I'm like, I hope I can do it. I'm very busy those 3 weeks.
You want to be able to engage
go in as an audience
too,
member, right? Exactly.
Yeah, you can use that happiness boost for sure. You'll
especially
be,
after those 3 weeks.
I was going to say, I know there's a lot of behind the scenes that's already in progress for you. I mean, you're already working and, you know, in preparation.
Yeah,
for
we're
this
already
event.
In rehearsals for the first show. We've been designing the other two shows for months and months and months. So, yeah, there's a lot of work.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be a nice little break for you to participate in that. I think that's good. All right. I have a bunch more questions still, but we're going to take just a little brief break and hear from our sponsors, hear a word from them, the Cultural Council for Palm Beach County.
Those dinner reservations and tea times will have to wait because there's an art-filled paradise beyond these beaches. A mecca of masterpieces, spectacular sights by day and night. A cultural capital that's calling your name. See so much more than you came for in the Palm Beaches.
All right, so we're talking with Dr. Alberto Ortiz, a nephrologist from TGH Advanced Kidney Care. Doc, thank you so much for being here. Let's talk about kidney disease. I hear it is a silent killer. Is that correct?
That is very correct. And kidney disease, you have to lose about 80% of your kidney function in order to have any symptoms at all. And once you do get to that point, the symptoms are very non-specific that you can find in other conditions like generalized weakness, fatigue, and poor appetite.
How do you treat it?
So we have, when you get to that point, we have what we call renal replacement therapies, and it consists on hemodialysis, in which we have a machine doing the filtering of the blood in replacement of the kidney. And then we have a kidney transplant in which you get another kidney from somebody else.
All right. So that sounds bad. I don't want to get there, doc. So how do I prevent it?
So we have different therapies that coupled with good lifestyle modifications and good healthy eating and exercise do go a long way.
Great, doc. Well, thank you so much. And that was your Medical Minute brought to you by TGH.
Okay, so that's so much connection that's about to happen in this world of theater. Whether, you know, you're finding people who are already entrenched in the community and are your diehards and are coming and they're your support system that you can count on, or you're reaching new audience members, hopefully a good amount of them.
Always hoping to.
Yes, right? Yeah. I really want to know, how does this kind of work that you're doing, whether it's through the festival or through what you're doing year round, expand? How do you see it expand into the broader community in Palm Beach County and maybe in South Florida?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons we wanted to change the festival, is that we wanted to be able to open up our audience, right? Like, again, you know, a new play audience is a very specific audience. They're like, they're wonderful, lovely risk takers. So how do we get the people who only go see the shows they saw 30 times already? Like, how do we invite them into? And then the other thing for me was, how do we make an impact on our surrounding community, right? And so this idea of this being like a destination event, you know, hopefully we will see, you know, there are proven models around the country where, like I was reading about one in 2019, 18,000 tickets over 3 weeks, right, to see multiple productions. So obviously there's a financial benefit to that, sure. Right? But like the other thing that is the impact on the surrounding community, right? And like, when people come to town to see this festival, that's the main draw, right? Well, they're also going to go to the local restaurants in town. They're going to shop at the local shops. They're going to frequent some of the other, you know, local museums and things that we have. They're going to stay at local hotels. So this impact we can have on the broader community and the economy of the broader community, and to show that, like, I think we can get a little esoteric in the arts and a little like, we're doing our work because our work matters, right? Well, we're also doing our work because we live in a space and we are living with other people who these stories matter to, mm-hmm. and that like, and the things that we can do. So we're always looking for how can we deepen our connection with our community. And I am very excited about how this festival in particular will help us really build even deeper roots into the Boca Raton and South Florida community, and allow us to show off what happens here, because I am so tired of meeting people and being like, you do theater in Florida? They do theater in Florida? And
wow.
Being like,
yeah,
yes, we do. And we do really great theater in Florida. And so, yes, get down here to Florida and see some of what's happening here. And I think because we're doing all new plays, we'll always have that little feather in our cap of like, hey, you know that show that everybody loves now 20 years later? We started that, you know, like that, mm-hmm. kind of stuff, which would be fun.
Man, so You're building this audience. I think you said this earlier off camera. You're wanting to work slightly ever so to push an envelope,
yeah, yeah.
as you grow and develop every time, right? Like you said, you're somebody who likes something that maybe is a little bit on the weirder side, yeah. Or, you know, I mean, how do you slowly work that in, right? Because it can't be just a jump, yeah. from somebody seeing a show that they've heard of a million times, no. that they've seen of five, and going, right. from a complete unknown,
yeah.
that might be a little bit edgier or off in a different area for them.
Right.
So how do you slowly work your way towards expanding?
I think that's been definitely the biggest evolution in for me personally in my career in the last 10 years, is just learning that I am in constant conversation with our audience, that like, it might be all well and good if I find four plays that I'm obsessed with and I want to do. If nobody comes to see them, then I have really not done my job, right? And I always say, like, my first obligation is to the playwright to make sure that I'm serving that playwright's vision and what they're hoping to do with the play. But I have an equally large obligation to my audience, right? This is a place that they feel safe, that they feel welcome, that they feel, again, that the quality is always going to be there, even if they're not familiar with the work. And so one of the things that I have learned over time is that, like, okay, we have to use what you are accustomed to then start moving you forward. And I think all good art does that. But as you said, like, there are definitely shows that I would love to do, but I'm like, no, you like that because this is a weird thing. But your audience will be like, why is he doing this weird stuff?
Eventually, you put that in your pocket for later, so, and you work your way back around.
So you like kind of walk him down the road. But like, you know, recently I said, we're actually, you know, middle of figuring out what next season is. Mm-hmm. And I've got a couple plays that I know are kind of non-traditional in structure. So one of the things I've been actively looking for right now is like, okay, then I need one where they're going to recognize something, right? It might be the setting. It might be that it takes place in an apartment, which I always joke, I hate apartment plays. Like, it just, as somebody who consumes theater, that's like the last thing I go see is like, if they're like, this is a family in their living room. I'm like, we call them living room dramas. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, I'm out on that. Right. I want to go see the thing where it's like, oh, this takes place in a unreal world and there's dragons and puppets. I'm like, yes, I'm in.
Sign me up.
But you know, it's like, I'm there to serve the audience, right? It's like, we have that catchphrase at Theater Lab that I wrote on the thing. Theater is an active community. And if you're not listening to what it is your audience wants, you can push them a little bit, right? I always make the joke. I say, audiences think they hate being confused, but they actually love it. And that's, I 100% believe that because, and you know it, I think too, if you're watching a movie and you've figured everything out, you get bored so quickly. The stuff that you like is the stuff that you are dying to lean over to the person next to you and be like, why is that person doing that?
Right? Absolutely.
And so like, you love confusion as long as it pays off, right? And so, yeah. So how can I take what you're already into and just push you a little bit so that next year we can just get there a little bit more and get there a little bit more. And then maybe, you know, 5 years from now, I can do the really weird play and they'll go with me. You know? Nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got to grow together.
Yeah. And they're not a monolith either. I mean, that's the other thing to remember is that like different plays in your season are going to speak to different portions of your audience. Your job as the theater maker is to make sure that it's not only speaking to that portion, that it can open up to the other people as well.
Definitely. So we've talked about risk multiple times, I feel like already. Is there one particular risk that you can mark that's like, that was a big one and it paid off?
Like in terms of personally, yes. I mean, shout out to my wife, Nikki Fried. I've been riding her coattails for 20 years. But, you know, no, we were both teachers. I was teaching at a local school, G-Star School of the Arts. I'd been there for 6 years at this point. She was teaching at a private school. We were both teaching theater. And one night she just said, I think I want to leave teaching and just be a full-time artist. And I was like, okay, do it. And so she left and did that. And the very next year I left and did the same thing. So I always like, that's the one I always go to. Like that was a major, like, let's jump off the cliff and see what happens. Right. And as I said before, like every time we took those risks or thought like maybe this is going to work out, there would be a knock somewhere and you're just like open to listening to it. So that was a huge one. And that was, you know, that was over a dozen years ago at this point. And we've both been, you know, she's very famous local celebrity. She's a brilliant actress and she's in a ton of stuff all around town. And I've been running Theater Lab now for a while. And like, in terms of our programming, I think everything we do is a risk. It's always like, you know, but I think I've gotten so accustomed to not, I've trained myself to not be afraid of risk. Mm. And I think we think of risk, we have this like really basic way of thinking of it in terms of like risk reward, right? And like that something could be a failure. I go back to the thing of like, you know, I think it's an Edison quote maybe where he's like, I didn't figure out the way to invent the light bulb. I figured out like 500 ways not to.
Yeah.
And that's it. So it's like being comfortable with the idea that like, I say this on the first day of rehearsal all the time. My staff has a I was like, I changed my mind a lot, and my staff always laughs. And there's like an unwritten rule at Theater Lab of like, don't do anything until Stabile's had 24 more hours to think about what he just said.
Yep.
Like, don't go out and start building the set because he's going to come back in and be like, I don't know about this. But I think what that does, and I am very intentional at the start of rehearsals, and I tell people that, is that I'm like, if I'm willing to say I'm going to change my mind, I want you to be able to say that too. And that's where, like, I think real payoff risk happens, is that like, once I've made a choice, I'm not locked into that. We could go down this path for a little while and be like, you know what? That didn't work out. Mm. Let's go back and try again. And if we approach the risk that way, that like, when we get to this thing, it's not actually the end of the road. It's just the end of that pathway.
Yeah.
And now we're like, oh, now we actually know how to walk that path, and we get there quicker the next time. So that's kind of how I think I try to approach it. But you know, if we got scared of risk in new plays, we just close.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you probably wouldn't have lasted this long, right? Definitely. Okay, this is a question that I ask everybody who comes on the show, which is that if you had to name one place, event, you know, work of art that somebody visiting or living in Palm Beach County should experience, what would that be? And you can feel free to shamelessly plug yourself. I'm not gonna be mad at it.
Obviously, I'm gonna say Theater Lab. Let's see though. But there are a lot of really great theaters in South Florida. Unfortunately, what there is not is like an existing theater district. Mm. That's just what it is, and that's okay. I don't think there's maybe one starting right now, but it's interesting because it's like, I think we think of the New York model, right? And you go to the theater district and you're walking around, and what happens is you're there to see a show. You're there. You're like, I bought my tickets to go see Hamilton. Right. And while you're walking, you go, oh, that looks interesting. And like, oh, what's that one? And what's that one? And so like, I think we don't benefit from that as much, you know, because we don't have that. So I would, number one, just encourage people, like, go to South Florida Theater League, which is a resource down here, and just see who's around and what they're doing, and go check them out. Like, go check out their work. Palm Beach Drama Works does wonderful work. Malt Jupiter Theater does great work. Thinking Cap. I could name all. Zoetic Stage in Miami. Like, but you have to be willing to drive too. That's the other thing down here.
Yeah, sure.
And then on a personal level, my wife and I always loved to visit Murakami Gardens.
Yeah, it's
gorgeous. A beautiful spot to go and just, you know, you can just go for a walk out in nature if you want, which is great. So, and then, you know what I'm going to say? This is a deep cut. At Jonathan Dickinson State Park.
Uh-huh.
Okay. There is a kayak trail that you can take, and you row the kayak all the way up, and you go to a place that is a cultural site. I think his name was Trapper Nelson.
Yep. I've been there.
Craziest story, like, so fascinating. And you get the day out in the, you know, like, hey, there's alligators and I'm rowing by them in a kayak.
You swim by, you know, or not swim by, an otter swims by you.
Yeah. And, you know, so I think, you know, like, I'm a Florida kid. And so like, anytime you can like, be like, you know, Florida's cool too. Like, go check it out. Like, so those places are
nice. Yeah. That's a great list. Yeah. I love it. What else did I have here? There's a few more things that I wanted to get into. Like, another memorable moment, perhaps, live theater, anything can happen. Is there any particular moment that stands out as a big memory of something, I don't know, went mega right or mega wrong? Or
it's
like
always mega wrong, isn't it? It's funny. I have a rule that I've built for myself, which is that when a show opens, I watch opening night. Obviously, I've been watching it the whole way through rehearsals. And then generally now, I don't come back until the end of the run. And it's because opening night, I'm sitting there chewing my fingers off. And like, I'm not a parent, but I imagine like this is exactly how parents feel. Like, the kid is on the playground. They're doing the thing. There's nothing I can do to help them. There's no support I can give them. I feel like we're always on the edge of disaster. It's like, oh my God, is that door going to open? Oh my God, is that cue going to play? Oh my God, is that you're going to remember your line there? Okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, and then I know myself well enough to not come back during the run, because what I end up focusing on is like, oh, we could have done that differently. And I'm seeing all the things that like I might change. But then I do very intentionally come back at the very end of the run, because what has happened at that point is the show has been given over to the actors.
Right.
And so what we always talk about is like, we set the bumper lanes, you know, like for bowling, right? Like here are the bumpers and you're free to do anything you want in this area. And by the time I come back 3 weeks later, the show has changed slightly mm-hmm. and they're finding new stuff and stuff that I'm like, oh, that's great. That's yeah. fun. And so I get to experience it a little more the way an audience would. Mm-hmm. So like those are always really special to me. In terms of like, I was once in a show like live performing and the director had decided that we had cups, but the director decided that they didn't want any liquid on stage. I was very, very sick and I was like getting over and I had a horrible like chest cold and I was losing my voice and I walked out on stage. I'll never forget this. It was a breakfast scene. So I had a coffee mug in my hand. There's no liquid in it. And I cough. And it was one of those coughs that like, as I coughed, all moisture left and I had no voice. And so I literally went to say my line. I was like, right. And I'm just struck. And everybody in the audience, I'm like, I mean, this is probably not what was happening, but in my mind, I'm like, everybody in that audience is like, dude, just take a drink.
Right, like, right, right.
And I was like, fake drink. And I still come up with like, and so my last, and it was like the last scene of, for me in the play. And so like my last five lines just sounded like, and then I just walked off stage like, that's the worst thing that's ever happened on stage. Yeah. But, you know, there's all those crazy stories yeah, too.
The irony of having the drink yeah, in your hand, but it's like, just empty.
These people are like, what's wrong
you're
with
like, it? This Why is exactly what I need yeah. and I don't have it. I love that though, what you said about, you know, you're not sitting in the whole span of the production and editing in your head.
No, can't do
it. You're letting the actors, they're taking over. They're finding their own fine tuning along the way.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure that experience for them is invaluable where they don't have, you know, they have the opportunity to grow it themselves.
Right. I mean, I say that all the time. It's like, if my job is to put together a team, then I also, my job is to trust that team. Right. And like, so I've never understood a director who wants light reflecting puppets, right? Like that they just move the actors around and tell them what to do. Yeah. I've never understood that because it's like, well, if I trusted them enough to take this role, then like, let them do their thing. And that same is true for your designers. Like let your people do their things and trust them that they're going to put their artistry into it as well.
Yeah. Your favorite quote is imagination is more important than knowledge. How does that philosophy play into your work at Theater Lab?
Yeah, that's an Einstein quote. And I think I picked, it's so funny that when you asked me, like when I saw that you were going to like maybe talk about that, I was like, oh, right. That's still in that one bio.
But that's always what happens. I have had to review my own bio so many times when people bring it up to me. I'm like, oh yeah, that is in there, huh?
Well, and it's there because it was from an educational thing that I was doing and it got, yes. So I think that that's like a great quote for kids mm-hmm. because I think, especially when they're starting in the arts, like, so I work with, I've been doing arts camp at Kravis Center for over a decade, much over a decade. And like, you know, these are 9 to 11 year olds. So some of them have done some theater, but some of them it's like brand new to them. Right. And so the first thing I wanted to disarm them about is that like, it's okay if you don't know anything about this. Mm. Imagination is more important than knowledge. Like you don't have to know about this yet. As long as you can dream about it and like we can figure out together. And then in terms of like my broader philosophy, I think, my mom's a science teacher, has been a middle school science teacher for like 30 plus years. So I'm also a bit of a science geek. So like finding an Einstein quote was kind of like, yeah, I'm there. But it's that like, it is the what is knowable versus what is dreamable. And if we spent all of our time in the what is knowable, we wouldn't be out of the dark ages, right? It's like we have to be able to dream of like what might be possible mm-hmm. so that then we can set plans in place to like make that possible. But the other one my other guiding like quote philosophy is actually a William Goldman quote. He wrote The Princess Bride and his quote about Hollywood is no one knows anything. And so I do live by that a lot.
I think that's shareable and across a lot of industries. Yeah, so it's not exclusive to Hollywood.
Right. And so it's just like this, like that helps me again with the risk taking is that like, I don't get as scared of like, if I don't know this, cause I'm like, no one knows anything. Or like, do I think this is going to be good? I don't know. We'll try it. Like, let's see what happens. So yeah, being able to dream, being able to, just let yourself dream and not like instantly again, going back to like picking projects that are difficult, like not instantly saying like, oh, I love this script, but there's no way we can do it. Just being like, well, what way could we do it? It may not be the way it's on the page. It may not be the way another theater is going to do it, but right. how can we do it? And yeah. so that's where imagination is vitally more important than knowledge. Because if I just stuck to like what my knowledge is of the space and of our mm-hmm. limitations, we'd never try half the stuff we try.
You might not have a flying apparatus, but you have twinkly lights.
Right, right. I mean, we've done plays where we like have had like live video and like all this stuff. And like none of that, before we did that show, we didn't know how to do any of it. So it was really just like, well, let's figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. You mentioned some advice earlier already, which is maybe don't try to plan out your career yes. in this field too stringently. But is there any other advice that you would like to impart with maybe somebody who's looking to get into any of the areas that you've covered, acting, writing, directing, producing?
Yes. Maybe I'll go. One of the things I teach the little kids is like I say we're going to learn some words today that's going to be our mantra. And so my first one is be present. So just be in that moment that you're there in, especially when you're doing the work. Like try to just let yourself be doing the work and not be thinking about what's this going to look like later? Or, you know, are people going to like this? Like, just be there because eventually the work will be done and it'll all be a memory. And like, mm-hmm. you want it to be a good memory. So be present, be patient, right? Be patient with the other people around you. Be patient with yourself. Like you're going to go through things and it's okay. Just let it happen. Be as positive as you can. And then be persistent. And then that persistence will lead to progress. And then we will get to perseverance. And so like, I think that is a general, I use that with the little kids, but I think if you think of your career that way as well, you don't get stuck in the ideas of like, I should be farther along right. than I am. All those traps that we fall into as artists. And the other thing I go back to the nobody knows anything, right? I think too many times, especially when a kid says like, maybe this is what I want to do. I came from a family where there it wasn't an artistic family. Like I was the first person to like be doing that, right? Well, what was the instant reaction? Like, oh, well, you can't make a living doing that. I always tell kids, I'm like, look around. Just as you're walking around, look around. There is art all around you constantly, whether it is commercialized art, graphic design, like all that stuff. Like it is around you constantly. You are constantly consuming it. If there wasn't a way to make a living in this, that stuff wouldn't exist. Like there is a way to do it. It's just that this is a person who has no connection mm-hmm. to what that industry is like, right? So like specifically in theater, even when I taught, you know, generally what the parent is worried about is like all they're aware of is Broadway or Hollywood. Those are the two most common like theater experiences sure. that people understand. What they don't understand is that there are vibrant, healthy regional theater scenes all around the country. And so you absolutely, if you are paying your bills and living a good life, doing the things you love, then that's all that matters. And like, yes, maybe you're not going to be a Broadway star, but you can have a career and not be a Broadway star. And so I try to like, that's one of the things I just try to focus on is that like, there are more opportunities than you are aware of. Don't try to plan your career out, like let it happen, stick to it. And you know, look for the people who matter, you know, stick with them. When you find that connection, like keep that thing because it matters. It's special.
Yeah. When you get plugged into a community that's willing to go with you, support you, be a part of your journey and different, you know, different phases, things are going to change.
Of course. Yeah. And sometimes it's just time and place, you know, it's like, and you do this for a little while, like, again, not planning your career.
Right.
And then maybe there's something else that will come along, but like, you know, it goes back to the whole thing. Like it's the Ted Lasso thing. Be curious. Just be curious, like see what else is out there.
I love it. That's great advice.
Thank you.
Well, that was really my last question, other than, of course, if people want to connect with you further, connect with Theater Lab, come to the festival. Yeah. Tell us the name of the festival.
The name of the festival is the Owl New Play Festival.
The Owl New Play Festival.
It's on the FAU campus.
And the dates for that?
The dates are April 5th through April 20th. You can go to our website, which is fau.edu. /theater lab. You can literally Google us. Yeah. Just make sure you're Googling Theater Lab Boca Raton, because there are a couple other theater labs across the country. And yeah, all the information is there. You can follow us on social media or on Facebook and Insta. So you can check out what we're doing. And, you know, we want you as part of our community.
Yeah. Got to get them in there and have some great theater experiences, new ones. Okay. Very exciting. Well, thank you again so much for coming on and having a conversation with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, as always, thank you to our audience. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in for another episode. And a huge thank you to our sponsor, the Cultural Council for Palm Beach County. We'll see you on the next episode.